My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.
You Are Awaited is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast, possibly one of the only of its kind, where Yuri
Lowenthal...
I sort of hope so. Not just for our listeners, but also for the world. There's too many of these. It's weird.
Delusions of grandeur are healthy.
I'll take it. We're the only Mad Max Fury Road podcast in the world. And we watch 4 minutes at a time of Mad Max Fury Road, the film, and we talk about it. Only... as time has gone on, we have expanded into discussing the Mad Max universe. And in light of
in the Fury Road universe, for the most part,
Well, the comic book segued a bit into the history.
We did the first three movies.
We're
Fury Road centric.
Mac
Max adjacent.
Wasteland adjacent. We're Max adjacent. And we have a special guest on today. And it's going to be, I think, two reasons why I think this will be our best episode ever. Ready?
Wow.
Ever. One.
Oh, go.
This is the first time...
You're not just high because you're just so excited to be back because we've been off for a couple of weeks?
That's number one.
You know what I like about this? There's no pressure.
No.
And the reason why this is going to be the most absolute wonderful thing you've ever heard in your entire fucking life is because of what's about to happen right now.
This is the best... In 50 weeks, be the best one-hour segment, probably longer segment of your life, or our lives. Because, one, this is the first time we took a break from the podcast.
It's true.
And I'm stoked.
Yeah.
And two,
absence makes the heart grow fonder.
I feel fond of you.
I've wet myself already.
And two, no pressure. This will be the best guest we've ever had. Who will say the smartest things any guest has ever said.
Yes.
Every word he says will be best word ever
I've collapsed under the repressor of both of them.
So, Yuri, why don't you introduce your friend, and then we'll get into some Jason talk.
Just to also sort of lead into it, this episode is about the Mad Max video game that came out. And now I'm unclear on the timeline because I thought it came out before the movie.
I thought it was 4 months before the movie.
That's what I thought too.
But I could be wrong.
But then when I was reading up on it,
we should know.
That's something I should know. You guys will correct me on it as usual. We debated doing the video game, but then I realized because it's not Fury Road, but there's a lot in there that ties it to Fury Road. And while I had heard, full disclosure, I worked on the game. While I was working on it and talking to the people who were producing it, the first question was, are you in touch with George Miller to keep continuity, or is this a separate, totally separate thing? Because I know other properties have done that with films, and then they just go off and they do whatever they're gonna do. And they said, we had conversations before, early on.
It was the writer Odd, which is an odd name.
But Avalanche, the developer
said, the first chance I got to chat with him about it, I was just as curious as you. I asked the same question. I said, this is in this universe. It's very particular. Do you have something to go on? Was there stuff that George wrote? Was there stuff that he get passed to you? Are you talking to him? And Odd goes, oh no, we're talking to him about that whole thing. And I go, okay, so is this the movie he's doing? Is this the game of that movie? He goes, oh, no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my eyes were just as wide as yours. I was like, wait, so this is the same universe. You're in contact. You get this template, this thing you have, these marching orders in a way to create this thing. But you're on your own to create it, and it's not the same story. He's like, yeah pretty much.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. This is the best. What are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, and then they began, to unfold the story in front of our eyes, and I had a smaller part
in the game, so I, saw little things here and there. But to prepare for this podcast, Travis and I had to go on. Basically, we don't have time to play the game. Unfortunately, we'll bring in another special guest later on who has played the game all the way through.
Guys,
to talk about lots
today.
Of special guests.
The most
today.
Special guest for the most special episode.
Exactly.
That's it. The special episode.
The special
You've
episode.
Just coined it. I love it.
So why does this gentleman have such expertise about the game or expert knowledge about the game?
Me?
Well, I'm still delaying.
Still
I'm still delaying.
Yeah,
it. Hold on a bit.
Sorry.
Go. That. Yeah. We're gonna save that.
Yeah.
What? Yes.
You know what special is? Special is amping the tension.
That's right.
That's right.
who is this guy?
You know,
if they could just,
you know,
look
professional podcaster Travis would have discussed this beforehand.
You know, I like that you're not afraid to wing it.
You know what's great?
And that being like, if you only have one engine, keep winging it.
By episode 50, they expect nothing more from us.
Is that right? Exactly.
Wait a minute. You guys have done 50 of these
this
and you still 51. Don't have a plan?
This is actually, okay. Yeah. This is 51.
You haven't learned to plan ahead. That's what I like about you.
Right.
You know,
we don't learn from our mistakes.
No.
Plus, now people are, now, get this, everybody who's listening is like, is listening to your voice.
Yes, of course.
And going, Who
is that?
Who is that? Why? Who is that? Why should I know that is?
Wait a minute. I know.
So Travis and I had to go online because we don't have time to play the game.
The Plays of Silence.
Oh, yeah. It's Tom Hardy, guys. Sorry, I blew it. I blew the surprise. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Hardy.
half the listeners just stopped their car and went,
I thought I'd come on your podcast just to talk about this universe.
It's pretty good.
Anyway, I'm going to stop.
We often get into our throaty Tom Hardy voice just to... Test the waters
to titillate each other.
Only when we're in a room together, right. Alone, which is very odd, but sometimes I use it by myself.
Sometimes.
Yes.
So Travis and I had to go, and basically what we decided to do is, we didn't have time to play the game, but, you know, with, you know, Let's Plays and, you know, walkthroughs and stuff on YouTube, you can easily go on and at least watch all the cutscenes, all the cinematics from the game to see what the story was and to see... How we could compare
the narrative.
The narrative, yeah, the narrative part, exactly. Which is more what we're interested in because we're you know, talking about the story. This is not a video game podcast. Just your impressions, Travis. When I was watching it last night, there was so much that I, even working on the game in the small capacity that I had, there was so much that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by how closely it ties to Fury Road.
Yeah.
So in characters, events, and the comic books in particular.
Yeah, think of this.
Yeah, the stories that didn't sort of make it in.
Think of this, that the movie hadn't yet been produced. It's not like when they were making the game, they were able to see the dailies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They weren't even, as far as I know, able to see the script.
Those designs had to come out of the design studios.
Some
of
them,
the film.
But you'll notice that notice that the Immortans symbol is almost all over it.
Yeah, but it's also not quite. Not quite. Yeah.
I think with video games, though, they're also to catch up with a lot of that on the back end. So while maybe some of the symbology and stuff might have come in later in the design process, like they can put those things on near the end when they know what the ones are going to be from the movie, possibly. I don't know the process of that.
The character designs are amazing. Anyway,
yeah, but there's so this universe.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
For sure, it's so particular.
When you look at Scrotus and when you look at Stankgum and you look at Chumbucket and you look at all these people who've surrounded Max in this world, you do feel like they had the same production design team.
I 100%
but I
agree.
I do not believe they did.
That's crazy.
I do not
to
think
me,
so.
Right?
I don't think Avalanche used any of those reference designs.
Yeah, I would love to know what that process was because they came to a very similar end.
Do you want me to email them?
Yeah, we should.
I will.
We should find out.
Yeah,
and
no,
we'll follow up and we'll let you guys know on the Twitter feed.
Yeah. I'll email them and ask.
Because, and we could just start going down the list from things. Like a character called the Concubine, who is not one of the wives, but who is essentially modeled off of that. They've got their fair share of war boys. Mm-hmm. They've got the buzzards are all very close. And when you listen to the buzzards, I was listening for Russian. There was no Russian, but it was also unintelligible.
Yeah,
it was not English.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The buzzards' cars, the submerged, the buried mall where the buzzards hung out and kept the girl.
Yep.
In the comic books.
Yes.
Became just a buried airport, but it was still the buzzards.
Yes.
They still used the kids
to
hunt for the.
Yep.
So that design obviously was shared.
They
was
have
the buzzards.
To say that part
that
of
has to be from the comic book.
And
that's different from who actually did production design on the movie, because you know there's a distance between.
Well, the comic book guys was the same guy from the film.
Who did?
Was
yeah,
it?
Who did a lot of the design and storyboards? And
friend of the podcast, Mark Sexton.
And Brendan McCarthy. I mean, I know he didn't work on the comic books.
Did you ask him if he worked with Avalanche?
We didn't.
No.
I didn't clock the video game. Anyway, I want to let Yuri continue because I want people to know who's talking to him.
Oh, whatever. At some point. But this is so interesting. No one... Like,
I know,
just
I
the
know.
Suspense.
And here's,
like an episode of Sherlock where they really just stuck the script in a blender and they were like, wow, what happened? I don't understand. And it's okay because you like it anyway.
We front load the confusion and we spend the rest of the episode unraveling the intro.
That's correct. Like my career.
But I have specific questions I want to, you know, ask this gentleman. But I don't want to tip. I don't want to tip the reveal.
Well, okay.
And we hadn't really discussed exactly when that reveal would come around.
No. So let me just, can I take it?
But let's keep going. Okay. And
it feels early.
You know what? It'll happen early. Naturally. It'll happen organically.
I have an
it
idea.
Totally will.
It'll happen organic mechanically.
All of a sudden.
Another character in both films.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. And you think about those similarities.
It's such a specific phrase too. That,
oh.
All right. Yeah. So here's what, let me just tell you how this podcast came about since we're 10 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah.
Here's what happened. Yuri said, should we play the video game? I was like, I'm kind of hesitant. I don't know. I'm not a gamer. You guys probably can tell that from my lack of knowledge about anything in the world.
This is a controller.
Yeah. What is that weird thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, cool. I was like, if Yuri says it at this point, I'm into it. I trust him. Like, he's never,
love
Yuri's
you.
Never wrong.
That was your first
I just
mistake.
Learned this
That's
about this. So
mistake.
I was like, cool, we'll go do it. So I went on YouTube to look at some of these scenes. I'm so dumb. I didn't know cut scenes meant the cinematic scenes. I thought, well, I'm going to watch the deleted scenes from video game. Where's the real scenes?
Gotcha.
Anyway, I started watching it. It's a 2 hour film. I started watching it, and I texted Yuri. I'm like, hey, here's a link to this crazy thing I found. He's like, I'm 45 minutes in already. I was about to text you the same thing. This is great. And so I'm watching this. I am immersed. I'm excited. It's a whole storyline in the universe that's perfectly tangentially connected. We should get into this, but I think it's the perfect distance from the film.
Yeah.
Too far, not too close, which we can get into.
Yeah.
But then there is a main character that's not Max in the game, inarguably. And then Yuri goes, hey, I know that guy. I think I'm going to come on the podcast. And I was like, what?
What are you?
What's happening? And then I got super excited. And then I watched extra close so I wouldn't seem like a dummy. Too late, Travis. You blew it. Anyway, Yuri.
I don't know what he's talking about. Jeez. Thanks for inviting me. Oh, this is nice. Is that a crankshaft? Yeah. I'll tell you something, Sink. I'll tell you what. These guys are crazy.
Oh, shit. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chum Bucket to the studio.
Yay.
For those of you who played Jason Spezak, a talented actor
and a
twisted motherfucker who plays Chum Bucket, who is Max's constant companion and guide.
You're a constant companion by default, but he's there with you every second.
He's the lead of the game.
Yeah, he really...
A lot more to say than Max.
With as little as Max has to say about stuff.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
Like, Max,
yeah.
If he's talked a lot, it wouldn't be Mad Max.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so Max
It is a character pop... It is a game, much like the Mad Max films, that are populated with super colorful characters.
Yeah. Like, I think there's a scene where we're talking about building the Angel Combustion, and Max says, like, no V6, I need a V8. And I think I talk for another three minutes. I've been talking 3 minutes before he says that.
Yeah.
You know, that's it.
Six
syllables.
And the writing
I'm
for
like,
your...
you got your lines down? Good.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
I have a story about that, actually, lines.
Yeah, well, I think you should... Let's talk about, briefly, working on the game, because I played Stank Gum.
You did?
I played Stank...
You didn't
know
that?
Stop it!
You didn't know that?
Larry, I didn't know
Shut
that!
Up.
I swear Love to God, it. I didn't
until
know that.
Until this moment?
Yeah, until this moment.
Oh, that's why you don't plan things.
That's safe because you get moments like that.
Yeah, listen to this. Go ahead, do your Stank Gum.
I'm trying to think of...
Yuri! I'm so excited! Of
Remember when you got me and you tortured me?
Yeah.
And that whole thing where you're on the ground and Max is over top of you?
Right, and yeah, then the actor we were doing, we were performing on a performance capture stage.
Yeah.
I'm so excited right now.
This is going to be so long.
Brian Bloom did not hold back.
You know, it's one of the things...
He's amazing at combat. He's amazing at it.
Oh, he absolutely is.
Yeah.
But he's a brawler. Like, I mean, he's...
he runs his own martial arts studio.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
He's like second in command.
Yeah, Brian Bloom, for those of you who saw the A-Team movie.
Yeah.
He was the villain in the A-Team movie, but he also wrote the script.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was a teenage heartthrob back in the day.
He's a heartthrob now.
He's a heartthrob
let's
now.
Be
let's
honest.
Let's be honest. He has the kind of eyes that could pierce rock.
Yes.
Oh, that's hard.
Who is to be Brian Bloom. Interesting story. He was Max originally.
Ah.
And did all the performance capture.
Yeah,
the motion capture
of Max and
everything.
All the scenes. And then E3 came around after we'd been working on the game
for big video game industry
and
convention.
They put out the trailer, and everybody went nuts. They went apeshit because Max was not Australian. And they told Brian, we don't want an Australian accent. We don't want that. Just do your thing. How they told him that is beyond
weird
me, because like that's just dumb. How could you get all the production design right and tell me you don't want an Australian Max? Yeah. And he did an Australian accent for me. I heard him do it. He would have been fine.
He can do it, but they didn't ask him.
But they didn't ask him to. And everybody blew up. It was like, they can't believe Max is not Australian. Forget it. I mean,
he's also got an amazing like he's got
gravelly,
some hearty voice,
throaty. Yeah. And so they
that's my version.
Yeah,
asked him. They said, would you want to go back and redo all your lines with an Australian accent? And he, I remember being there. And he said, I told him no. I told him I don't. I think that you should give it to somebody who's genuinely, you know, an Australian actor. It seems like that's what the public wants. And he was
so humble,
gracious enough and humble enough. He was talented enough to do it. Again, I heard him do it.
Sure, yeah.
And he said he stepped away and let somebody redo all of the lines in the Mad Max game. Bryn, who is a very talented actor also, who was on The Last Ship and some other things, who's also a martial arts badass. I don't know what it is about guys who get cast as Max, but redid all the lines. So I did the whole game with Brian, and then I did a bunch of the game and dubbed all those scenes with Bryn.
That's
so the
crazy.
Whole game like twice.
Hey, but you know they're paying you by the minute. So
before you
don't
do
care.
This, for our listeners, some of whom who haven't played the video game, Jason, would you do us the favor of just quickly summarizing the plot of the game? Is that cool? Just quickly, and then we can get into what because I have a lot of questions about Stank Gum, but I want people to know who Stank Gum is in the grand scheme.
Yeah,
and gosh, then we can without spoiling too much. And,
I say
and you know how
it.
Mad,
this is a deep pull,
Mad Max
targeted audience.
Stories are not plot driven. That's the point,
right.
I think. We're not talking about intricacies of plot. And to me, the video game has to kind of have more intricacies of plot just because you have to be able to go on missions. You have to be able to do
it's totally
all this
mission
stuff.
Based, yeah.
So Max is without a car for reasons that, you know, it gets taken away as the setup. And so
much
now
like in the beginning of
right,
yeah,
right?
Fury Road.
Talk about a parallel.
Yeah,
so he's without this car, and Chumbucket, my character, who is a hunchback and a broken man.
And what do they? What does he call himself? What do they call mechanics in the world of the game?
A black finger.
And what do they call him in the
black thumb?
Black thumb.
Black thumb.
Yeah.
Right. So they call him a. His job is to fix cars. He's a grease monkey. Mm-hmm. He's a black finger. So the odd part about the setup of this story is. Max has no car, and neither does Chum. Chum has this little thing he's constructed or created,
right.
But pretty soon there's a reveal that Chum thinks Max is his divine savior. He calls him Saint. Mm. He calls him Saint, 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 throughout the whole game, because he believes that he's dreamt about Max and seen him coming, which will bring about the coming of the Angel Combustion. And the Angel Combustion is the name for the car that Chumbucket has designed with all of his awesome engineering skills.
The magnum opus.
And his magnum opus, his great work, is this car. And he believes that the Saint, or Max, is the man who's going to be able to get him the parts and be the driver of this car. And so that is the kind of the setup for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you go and you build your car, you go get a body for it, the engines, you have to do all this
more
stuff.
More armor, this, that, the other.
That's kind of the underlying... premise for the journey you go on. And of course, there is another journey, kind of like a journey of the heart, if you will, that Max goes on because he's entreated by this woman to save this child.
Mm-hmm.
And Max is having awful, you know, mental flashbacks and breaks about how, you know, horrible this world is. And the fact that there's this woman and this child that is almost like the last vestige of humanity left in Max, if he's the way that Odd, the writer at Avalanche, talked about this, was that it's the last piece of humanity that Max could possibly retain.
Mm-hmm.
That it is all gone. And that this is kind of a ringing of a bell, almost the ringing of if there's still any humanity left in Max or this world at all. It's just this faint echo.
We're gonna call it up
and have it come back and see its grip on him, because he's done this before.
Right.
He's done this too many times. He's suffered too many times. He's lost too many times, and you know he doesn't want it. And yet that is another undertone
mm-hmm.
of this. piece. And when it all gets taken away from him, of course, by the end of the game, I mean, he's broken again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very dark, right, nihilistic, horrible ending.
But which is wonderful. To the game.
Yeah, which is great.
Which,
yeah,
is another, you know, funny thing. You know, yeah, you know, the last sort of the
so
straw
the plot,
that,
whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the and we'll keep touching on things that really connect in
a lot
amazing
that
ways. Mm-hmm. With the film. And there are all these little details that they couldn't have planned. Like, I know the straw that breaks the camel's back for Chum Bucket,
yes,
is you were gonna put two extra tanks in the back.
Yes.
Where am I supposed to go?
Yeah.
You would do that, and I mean nothing to you.
Yeah.
And the car, the Interceptor in the very beginning, yeah, of Fury Road, it looks like the Magnum Opus, sort of. It's got, yeah, two tanks in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even
And they
clock
couldn't.
That.
I'm sure they didn't talk
that's
about
amazing.
That. That's not a plot thing. But it hooks up in all these weird ways.
It's yeah, almost prequel-y.
And
it feels like, yeah, a direct prequel.
And I want you, yeah, guys to know that that's sort of not what they said overtly.
Mm-hmm.
But they said it happens around that time.
Yeah.
So it didn't. They never mentioned that it happened after Fury Road, because I never heard mention of. And think about this when you're telling a story.
I don't think that it. Could.
No. When you think, yeah, about this, all the questions I asked as an actor of the writers, mm-hmm, of the producers, I always would ask these questions about this world because I want to know as much about it as I can to anchor it in reality. I never heard them say anything having to do with. This had already happened, or that had already happened, in reference to a Fury Road anything.
Right.
Yeah. So it can't have happened after Fury Road, because we're not taking any of those events into account.
Right.
We're not in this game. We, right, never address them. We never talk about them. They're not, mm-hmm, referenced in a way. And so for them to say it takes place in that at that time would mean, I mean, this may be a week, a month, a year, right before the events of Fury Road. Makes sense,
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
It makes,
oh,
total,
absolutely,
sense to me. Because 100%. It's almost like, you know, the Black Thumbs evolved into being called Black Fingers. Maybe, right, it's a year. Maybe it's 5 years.
Yeah.
That language subtly changes. That,
yeah,
the wives suddenly change. You know, concubines is not enough. And they have to become this worshipped, reverenced thing, right? So if you're looking at it, it could be a few year evolution.
Well, importantly, I think from the comic books, we know, mm-hmm, that Immortan Joe had three sons.
Right.
And drawn,
ooh,
as they are in the video game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Scrotus,
yeah,
is drawn that way. He's mentioned in the comic,
yeah,
books.
True that.
And we,
yeah,
don't see Scrotus, obviously, in the film. Spoiler alert, he dies in the game.
Right.
So,
right,
that all made perfect sense to me. It felt like a perfect Rogue One to Star Wars Episode IV,
yes,
situation. It fed right into it. You,
yeah,
know,
yeah,
as,
yeah,
Max drives off, you can imagine almost that he gets, you know, trapped by the buzzards the next Dune over.
Yeah.
It just,
oh,
feels,
right,
that way.
Or trapped,
right,
by the, yeah,
immediate,
by the warbles.
Right, sorry, warbles.
Yeah,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
yeah, and get
this
his car,
true,
boosted.
This,
yeah,
is true. I do feel that it, mm, that it is.
Because they leave him with the Interceptor. He gets his Interceptor
back
at,
correct,
the end of the game.
That's correct.
Yeah, they yeah, it really is the feeder to
there is a,
Fury Road, it feels
there,
like.
There is,
well,
a,
I said, such a sad moment, though.
It,
right?
it really,
like,
is.
It's just like,
it really,
oh,
is,
wow, you've been my,
yeah,
my confidant, my repairman, my everything in this game, and then you betrayed me, and then my world got burned down, and now.
But you're a hunchback.
But this world.
So who cares?
But this world takes
right,
over.
Oh, that's right. We didn't. I don't think we. He's a,
oh, yeah,
twisted. His body is gnarled and twisted, yeah, and.
Were you cast because you're actually a gnarled,
gnarled
twisted
hunchback?
Yes,
because our listeners
fact,
can't see you, so I want to describe,
yeah,
him for the listeners.
Absolutely.
You know,
he's a twisted hunchback.
One leg is about 3 inches shorter than the other.
Three is being generous.
Just to
seven or eight.
Well,
easily.
I pat it with my dick in my shirt.
Okay, great.
So that's
good,
why
old
I have
dick foot.
They're what I call my natural orthopedics.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
I just shove it in there and hope my sock,
sure,
size helps me out.
Sure.
Yeah. I am. I have spent 2 years with a salad strainer on my back. Like,
yeah,
they literally,
wow,
fashioned,
they put
a device and a harness that would go around my neck, and I just rubbed the mic, sorry everybody, and it would clip to my belt to make sure I could not actually move in a way that the game dots, what
you,
do you call
you
that? Not the animatic, but whatever, that you couldn't, I couldn't move in a way that the computer program would not be able to track.
2 years, you said?
Well, the mocap was a year plus.
Wow.
And then we went into the ADR.
Your commitment to the physical work on this, I have to say, because I did a day or two with you on the stage,
oh, man,
was thrilling to watch.
Thank you, man.
We also got to, we'll get that story later, but...
I have two things. I don't even know where to go. I feel a little directional.
Just start,
you know,
drawing.
What? This is a podcast, but I'll show him what the physicality,
yes,
was.
I want to see.
Oh,
you,
yeah,
guys,
yeah,
I'll describe it.
Like,
okay,
here, here. So this, oh my gosh. Great,
you know,
podcast. You almost have to take like a video of this for people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I literally,
What? For a year?
Yeah.
This is it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's Andy Serkis in Planet of the Apes, you guys. Yeah, almost directly.
I literally was doing that every time it was action or
Did
cut,
you get injured shooting this?
No.
That's amazing. You must have like yoga.
I climbed a ladder like that. Because remember, there's a ladder where he climbs up to show him the plans.
Yeah.
I climbed a ladder. I jumped in and out of cars. I jumped through the car. I was on the back of the car and transitioned to the hood. All those motions that you see me doing where I have to climb to the front of the hood and repair it for you.
Yeah.
I did those in Hunchback with a salad strainer on my ass. You know?
Yeah, you get something to tell your kids about.
Yes, I can.
Let's go.
Show me what you did, Daddy.
Yeah. We just started this thread, so I am still stunned by the fact that you did this character. Because, no offense to Chum Bucket, this is my favorite character. I thought.
Stop it.
I swear to God.
He's barely in the game.
I got so excited. No.
He's barely in.
No.
And I was so surprised because this is the first time I've watched it all the way through, and I'm like, I'm barely in the game.
No, he's the best villain. I loved Stangum. I thought he was great.
They changed. I will tell you.
They changed the script.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Well, but.
Because I thought he was a much larger piece of the story.
He's a huge part of the story. What are you guys talking about?
You go first, and then I'll come back with the whole audition story and everything.
Yeah, I want to hear all this. Let's just agree to do like a super long episode today. Because I got so much to say and ask. So Stangum, basically, is this like, this is the sword guy, right?
This is the dagger guy.
So cool.
Which, by the way, his sword play was awesome.
It's so good. Oh, Yuri's was?
On set.
You're a monster.
He's grabbing these fake swords they gave him.
Yeah.
And he's doing this sword swinging thing. And I'm like, damn.
It was the one move I knew how to do.
Yeah.
But it looked great.
He is this. I think the design is incredible. Go Google what the character looks like. It's just like face fucked up, skin missing, mohawked, half Joker character.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And he is the gatekeeper to this engine that Max has to beat in this race. He also has this concubine who is the main female character. So he's the obstacle. Because for most of the game, you think that Scrotus is dead.
Right.
And so Stangum is the de facto main villain.
Right, because he was Scrotus' right-hand man. Right?
Yeah, he's the main villain until you realize at the end, Scrotus shows up again.
Yeah.
So I just thought this, like, Devil May Care Joker character was so fun. And he's got two swords he swings around in both hands and chops people up.
It's great. One of the things that was in the original design when they showed the picture at the audition when they had this design... His lip was totally all like up. It was
it was
deformed.
It was like a hair lip. Degree.
Yeah.
Like it was a hair nose.
And to her credit, Chris Zimmerman, who directed a lot of the acting in the game, she was at the and we've known each other for a while. And she said, would you consider doing putting something there to me? And I went in and I grabbed a big wad of toilet paper and did the audition. With it shoved up under my lip.
Wow.
And it affected my speech.
He pulled a Brando.
He Brandoed it.
I Brandoed it.
Yeah, dude. I did too on this game, so I can't wait to tell you the story. This is so great. There's a connection here.
Oh, I love it. And I ended up booking it. And she said, you were the only actor who did it.
Who shoved it up?
The only one?
Yeah, the only one who...
That's surprising to me.
Dude, I'd shove anything up there, they asked.
Right?
Okay, I'm saying.
Well, let's just say, that's my usual.
So let me be honest. Right. So I will get the part if I shove this up there.
Shove this up there.
Okay, hold on. I've got it. Okay, let's do the lines.
But she insisted then, of course, much to my joy, that whenever we were doing the character, whether it was a VO session or a performance capture, that I maintain that. It's like, great. Yeah. And then they changed the design of the face, and in the end, he doesn't... The final design doesn't have
the actual physical reason for the sound.
Right. Yeah. Which luckily, as I was listening for it last night when I was watching it through, and it doesn't come across very strongly anyway, so I think if you didn't know that...
I can hear the wet tissues.
You can hear the wet tissues.
As a layman, I didn't even know that it was supposed to have a thing. It's just it's a voice I haven't heard you do before. So
yeah, it's sort of a shrill...
I clocked you in Star Wars.
Yeah?
Big time.
Yeah, that's right. We haven't talked about Rogue One.
Listeners, Yuri is also
brief,
in Rogue
you know,
One,
because
a Star Wars story.
If you've been listening to
the movie?
The movie, but just audio, in an audio sense, but
Rogue
yes.
One, a Star Wars story.
Wait, what
Rogue One,
a
Star Wars story.
Yeah, he's
you
a...
You did ADR?
All sorts of stories for this.
Yeah,
I was part of a loop group.
But
I made a dream come true.
And
how
I didn't clock
did
you in the
make
game.
The, oh, okay. it in that loop group?
Luck. It was luck.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
But
I think I talked about shoving things earlier.
I'll make sure that next time you know exactly where to shove that thing.
Wow, that would be great.
Yeah.
I always thought that the homoeroticism would decrease when we had guests on the show, but it
only goes up. No, it just amps it up.
You're going to have
a
problem.
It's three dudes in a 9x12 room with all the windows like closed and curtained, yeah. And there's video games
and
posters.
And you have your dick strapped to your leg.
And shoved in my
sock. Shoved in your shoe.
You know, and
but
Jason
if you've been if you've been listening to this podcast, and if you're here at episode 51, you didn't just walk right into this episode.
If you did, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, right. but you know that Travis and I have this abject hatred for The Force Awakens, uh-huh. But we have not talked about Rogue One since we saw it.
It was good.
Separately.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. So much more than I thought I was going to. And then I saw it a second time.
Yep.
And I was ready to sort of pick it apart. I'm like, well, I sort of liked it the first time, but... You know, but and I liked it more the second time. It actually held together better the second time than the first time.
I don't want to go down this rabbit hole with you.
You're right. You know, okay, you know, okay.
I just
want
to be the voice of reason because I'm so hungry for stories about the game.
Yeah.
But if we want, if listeners want, tweet at us. We'll do a Star Wars Rogue One
episode of the Mad Max podcast.
Save that for another episode because I'll be sitting here the whole episode going, wait, how did you get in that loop group?
Yeah, like, I know.
Literally the entire time.
I have things to say about Rogue One, but I do not want to get derailed. So, video game stories.
Yes.
As much as you guys want to tell,
I'll talk about my audition experience.
So do you do our audition experience?
Yeah. So when I saw the sides for Chum Bucket, you see the hunchback, you see the physicality, the broken face and all that stuff, but...
Yeah, his eyes are offset. They are not on the same plane. No, he's not a good-looking gentleman.
He's a bit of a wall-eyed fish, this guy, right? And just shorter gills. And you read the audition sides... And the lines are doing one thing, but they put in the description that he's higher energy, that he's, you know, a little unsure of himself, but that's just kind of how he is, but that doesn't stop his confidence
level. Part of his charm.
And then they gave the strangest, what do you call those things? They're like a parallel or a template. Often when in auditions, they'll say, we want him to kind of sound like... You know,
Bradley Cooper,
but not Bradley Cooper.
Right, Bradley Cooper
esque.
But yeah, Bradley Cooper esque. But so they like said, Tom Hardy.
Think Ratso Rizzo from Midnight Cowboy.
That's what the. Oh my God.
Okay, so take that, take that in, and think of the game. And they said it's that type of character.
And that type of relationship.
In that type
of
relationship.
The big handsome guy.
And so as soon as I read that, I went, oh shit. It's on because this I get this dynamic now because of all the lines and they you know they're like he's quasi religious about all this stuff and he goes on and he has this passion about the car and all that's window dressing to the top on top of you understanding the core dynamic between these two dudes.
Yeah.
So I go in to do the audition and I sometimes you never know in these auditions if they want you to do the physicality or they want you to what. And I walk in and I go, you know, Chris, I got to do them as a hunchback. I've got this character thing I'm doing. And they had the mic up, like where you would normally put it. And I'm like...
You made them lower it.
You're not going to be able to hear me. There was a camera. So they had to take all that and adjust all that because I did the physicality. And they're like, we can't even see him or hear him. This is not going to work.
Right.
So they moved all that stuff down into where it was. There was a scene where... We're laying up on the hill, and he's looking through the long lookers down at the camp, and Max is on his belly, and I'm on my belly, and I got on my belly and, like, got up as a hunchback and the whole thing. So literally, this audition that normally takes place, you know, standing, all took place practically on the floor or below 3 feet.
Wow.
And I'm doing, I do my shtick, I do my thing, I do it once through, and they're just like, okay. Holy shit. All right. Chris pushes the button and she goes, now make him a little more crazy. And you know how Chris, right? How she is.
Yeah.
And make him a little less sure of himself. So what that began to introduce was a little bit of the stammering that he does.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And a little bit of the crazy manic stuff, right? Which Ratso Rizzo from Midnight Cowboy doesn't have too much of a crazy manic or a stutter in there. And then the voice, I did kind of have this thing already going. But those two notes that she gave me added more of the, I would say, his sort of frenetic likability, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. To it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I got done, they put the mic stand back up and the camera back up, and they were like, thanks, we'll call you. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And then they told me that I got it. I was just blown away. I never thought for a second I'd get to be in a Mad Max anything.
Yes.
Because I love Mad Max so much.
Same.
Like, growing up, I just loved the world. And I was floored. I never thought for a million years they'd want me to play Chum Bucket. Or what the whole story was.
Yeah.
And I was
I've never been prouder of my work on that game than last night when I finally watched the story. Mm. To And by my work, I mean not specifically my work, but being involved with this project, because I never knew how close it came to the world, whether it was good, whether they told a good story, because I was, you know, involved just tangentially in certain parts, so it wasn't like a constant.
You only see the parts you're in.
Yeah, right, so, exactly.
Remedial question. Does the motion cap and voice usually come from the same actor in video games?
It all depends.
Recently more.
I would say...
Since Uncharted, a lot more.
Oh, that's true, yeah. I remember doing Uncharted Golden Abyss. It was one of the...
But you did JV. the motion capture for Stankgum also.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. On this game,
okay,
other than Max, and it was going to be Max as well,
right,
everybody who did mocap, that's their voice.
Wow. Yeah. And that's rare.
That's pretty
ish.
Rare.
Yeah.
It happens more now.
It does happen more now.
Just so I don't forget this, there's something else I wanted to say about the game. Just from a... non inside baseball thing, but from a Mad Max Fury Road perspective, is that one of the things that Yuri and I think both love the most about Mad Max, and I assume that you may as well, is this sort of loose merging of grand mythic gritty storytelling with a soft mythology storytelling.
Yes.
And there's everything's very grounded and gritty, and everyone, all the punches land, but also there's things that are a little magical sometimes in the film.
Sure.
Which we love, you know, and just enough. It's just enough hint. The one actual magical thing that happens in the film is Max has a premonition that saves his life in the film when he puts his hand up with the girl, shoots the dark
crossbow bolt.
It's an actual, since we parse it out and look at it so closely, it's an actual premonition that saves his life. That's magic. That's straight up magic, right?
Yeah, sure.
And used perfectly. It's sprinkled in a way that you think, oh, what? But it's not too much magic.
Because he has visions generally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So the ability for him to discern what's a mad vision and what's a premonition.
Yeah.
Right? A premonition is just a useful mad vision.
Right. But the fact that any of them could be externally true or have validity in the external world.
In the real
world
at all.
It's crazy. It's a crazy idea. And I love that they did it. But the video game leans so hard into the mythology, the religion of the V8 and the cars in a way that the movie doesn't have time to do.
Yeah.
It's very pleasurable because the balance, say the movie is 95% if it's that mix.
Sure.
The video game's like 80-20 almost.
Right.
Yeah. There's lots of, and your character specifically.
Think of it. The reason your dialogue is the reason why is because you are the action in the video game. Mm. Right? Because in the movie, the action takes place in the story, right? Mm-hmm. But in a video game, you're playing the action in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You have to drive a story in a completely different way when it's a game versus in the movie.
Yeah. When it gets to a cinematic, the action can stop.
Right.
In a way that it does allow you to now tell a piece of the story that in a movie you may think you don't have quite the time for, because as Max is, it's always a bowling ball rolling downhill.
Right.
Yeah. Right? So you can't stop the bowling ball in order to tell this mythological story.
Right.
So in the game, you enjoy the moment where they wrote this stuff for me that... If you read the dialogue, you're like, what the hell is this stuff? And it goes on for page after page. The very first day it wasn't the first day. It was like the second day I went into do mocap. It was the scene where we go into the ship, the container, where Liam's character, which is the old sailor guy.
What's his name?
I can't remember the name of the...
Gutgash.
We go into Gutgash and I'm the count of the carburetor, he calls me.
Yeah.
Right? That scene, when we pull in there, I'm terrified. And I start saying this prayer.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Right? There's this prayer that I say.
Yeah.
When I got there that day, there was only one scene that I had gotten the pages for, the dialogue. And that scene was the one with the V8, where it was like, you know, we're going to get the V8. Ha ha, the big chief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That one. That was the only scene I got the dialogue for. We're reading through it. We're rehearsing. We do that scene. We're done. I'm like, okay, well, thank you guys. It has been a great day. We'll see you tomorrow or whatever. And they go, oh, no, wait, we got two more scenes left.
Oh, no.
I go, what was that?
Oh, no.
So they hand me the pages of this quasi-religious monologue that I have
to do. Yeah, it's like Shakespeare. It's like, it's literally
was like 2.5 pages of craziness. Oh, and I go, and they're like, yeah. I said, what scene is next? They're all this one. So I go, okay, excuse me. I go out back and I go around the corner. And then next door is that furniture shop. There's like a furniture shop next door down there, Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
And I'm outside the building, dressed in mocap with a salustrianer on my back, going, by the press of leather crankshaft and the bee in the bottom. Like, and I'm literally going through this thing like mad. Because I literally have to perform it and be off book in five minutes.
That's the thing with performance capture versus just doing the VO in a booth. When you do that, you don't have to memorize anything when you're in the booth because you've just got the script in front of you.
Yeah. Right.
When you're doing performance capture, they need to capture it as if it were you're watching a movie or a play.
You could have dialogue somewhere. So that's what I said. I did Brando it a little bit because I took the script and I taped it inside the car just in case I got lost.
Yeah.
And to this day, I do not remember staring at that script once. I was literally so fucking
happy to be
nuts
there.
And in the moment and just scared out of my mind and chanting this prayer thing. I think we did 3 takes. And although I taped it there, I don't remember looking at it like once. I was just like spewing this insanity. And it was like that very often. I would come in and read Odd's words, and it was lyrical, Shakespearean, quasi-religious stuff.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
And part and parcel of the universe. It never felt outside of the film.
Oh, no. It never broke the laws. In an interesting, amazing way, it never broke the laws of the film universe.
I mean, hearing how it was made, it's even more surprising that the linguistic sort of specificity is so precise in the game. Because it's not an easy thing to match, necessarily, dialogue-wise.
He worked very hard on this, and there were times when he came to me and we talked about it, and he said, do you think that this is the right word for that? And I'm like, yeah, what exactly are you trying to impart here? And he would agonize over whether a word was anachronistic in the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. Because they do understand cars and parts and things like that, but it can't really reference too much modern stuff. Like there was a time when I'm staring at the plan for the magnum opus, I say, with a whammy turbo high dog, right? I say a whammy turbo high dog. And he didn't want to say a whammy turbo hydra because it's an actual thing.
Yeah.
For example, hydra is an actual thing that exists. And I'm sure a company owns the trademark to or whatever. But he was careful to twist the words that it could have evolved into that's what they call
it
now.
Which is so much of smart.
Which is just crazy when you think about that.
Yeah, and he had to constantly evolve the language into a place that would seem natural in this world.
Yeah. And he did it agonizingly. Again, as a writer.
And not an English as his first language.
He's a Swedish guy.
That's crazy. He's a Swedish guy. Because knowing which direction and which words and how much to mess up the words. There's a lot of made up words in this game. Same as the film, right?
Yeah.
But knowing how to do that, I was watching, there's a couple words. I wish I had remembered them for this podcast, but there's some words that are so specifically messed up, they're beautiful. Like they're beautiful mistakes.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Hullabaloos.
Yeah.
Right. There was one that started with an M that was such a specific fuck up word, and I loved it.
Speaking of M words, I just realized how I know that this game had to have come out before the movie, or no, because I would have recorded before regardless. But Stank Gum, at one point when you're fighting him in the end, says mediocre.
Yeah, I know. I clocked that.
Yes,
but I knew that was you. Yeah. You fucking asshole.
I know.
God, I love it. He's like, you know, you're my friend, but you're a dick.
Because I'm
for
so
not
excited.
Sharing this with me. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I got punked on this podcast by not telling me that.
You know,
he's a shrieky.
It's so funny.
He's a shrieky guy.
Yeah. To see your face. You're so happy that you punked him.
Yeah, I know. It's the biggest compliment in the world.
It's fabulous.
I did love that character.
The premonition and the hallucination stuff. You know, there is that character, that shaman character that he goes to that blows the dust into his face.
Yes.
Who is carrying his little house on his back, like all the wretched around the base of the citadel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they clearly had some design that they had to.
That's what I really want to know, and I wish we would have
asked him,
known this before this podcast. But the design elements are, Matt, you know how crazy this is for the listeners. How crazy the design elements are in Mad Max, not precise and specific. And we know, having talked to a bunch of the designers now, that there's a lot of agonizing and slaving over these designs. Imagine if those are a 10, the game is like a 13 or 14. The characters are crazier. There's guys with metal shards shoved through their face. There's like skin burnt off. The deficits and defects are larger in the game in a way that's really pleasing to me. Like, I really like seeing the design of those characters.
You can get away with that in CG, I imagine.
Right. Sure.
Easier than rigging up a human
face. That's 10
face
hours of makeup.
And then getting the person to, you know, do all those things with it.
Right.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Like the design of Scrotus's car, his rig, was totally in line with
100%.
Different enough, but still.
There's pages in this book, you're like, oh, that's like Scrotus's rig almost, man. Yeah. Like, dude, that's how they build. It's like a method.
And, and Scrotus's costume is, as you call it, costume? I don't want to be all cool here, but it's so specific, and it had to have come out of the comic book, I assume.
Yeah, and here's the one of the things that I remember, if the other Travis Willingham were here, who played Scrotus.
Yeah.
He played Scrotus?
Yeah, you know Travis Willingham.
Oh, wait, I think there was a different voice, though. Wasn't it that Trav did the physicality?
You know what?
And they did get someone else to do the voice.
In the beginning, when I was watching the thing last night, it didn't sound like Travis in the beginning, but it sounded like him in the end.
Right. I remember Chris telling me that Trav was just doing the body capture for that, and that they had someone else for the voice, and I don't know if they held that up.
Scrotus's character he walks out. As a matter of fact, one of the first things you see when he's walking out, he has this cod piece that is this horn.
It's a rhino horn.
It's a rhino horn coming out of his junk.
Yeah.
And often, you don't have to have, you know, full costume when you're doing performance capture, because it's all going to be created later. But occasionally they will create accents for you so that you move right.
Right.
So that you take into account that you don't put your rhino horn through somebody else by accident.
Right. So you know you've got that. So they gave him, when he first walked out, he had this giant copies, and it lasted about 10 seconds because nobody
could do it with him. No one could act.
And they just took it off. They're like, you know, well, fine. We'll just make sure that you.
Travis is hilarious anyway.
Yeah.
And if to be in a scene with him with that rhino cock on, you couldn't.
How tall is he?
He's tall. He's tall.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's like 6.5 feet tall. Yeah.
I mean, Scrotus is 12 feet tall, basically.
Yeah.
He's so big.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But they've got it. They've got. Sorry.
I was just give a plot detail, but go on.
When things come up, and I'm like, oh, and this and that. They've got a Thunderdome scenario. Yep. They've got the Murder Dome. So much of it takes place in Gastown, which you never get to see. Fury Road.
Gastown looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a fort area. Where they have
town.
A guy in Gastown.
Who's from the Bullet Farm.
Who's, right. You're fighting these guys. Which is why they had to have talked about things like the Doof Warrior.
Okay. Yes.
Because there's a guy who is suspended above the melee, and he's banging on things and basically whipping up the... You have to destroy him to get them to calm down. I'm like, it's the Doof Warrior, but that
Stable.
Fort's Doof Warrior.
Yeah. Ryan.
I have a... Do you know in the Lighty Boy?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I played Lighty Boy.
No way.
Really?
Yeah. I just thought I'd throw that at the
table. This is crazy.
You mean the Lighty Boy, the guy who calls him Lighty Boy?
The actual character?
I played the guy who would... The super feminine guy
who cranks
the thing.
I love it. Because he kept looking at you and you'd be like, oh yeah, crank.
I played.
That's so funny.
He was mute. He didn't say anything.
Right. But you
but
did the.
I did the physicality.
And that's another thing that happens a lot on performance capture stages is
you'll play the characters, and all our eight viewers or our eight listeners.
Yeah.
That, you know, that happens a lot on performance capture stages.
Come here, Lighty Boy, whatever he says. And I'm like...
You're like the gimp.
I'm like the sort of saucy, scared gimp. Yeah, I played Lighty Boy. They were like, you know, we need to have somebody for Lighty Boy, whatever. Go, I got this.
Yeah,
because I've been doing Hunchback for like a while.
Right, you're like, can I just fucking stand up?
Well, time out. Let me do this. I got something. They're like, okay, whatever. And then we just ran through the scene once with me doing all that sort of... Just playing off him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's great.
They left it all in there.
That's great. Plot-wise, real quick. I guess I knew this passively, but I haven't played a lot of video games. There's a really, I think, engaging narrative cinematic story going on. And some of the plot twists, and I clock what you're saying, that there's like, it's not plot driven necessarily, but there's some plot twist that got me excited or surprised me.
There's more of that there than there is in a movie.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. Yeah.
In the game. Yeah. I didn't want to like go through all of it because there's way more.
It's a two-hour YouTube clip you watch and it's all
I would highly recommend that if you're not a gamer and you're not going to play it, but you love Fury Road, if you want like deleted scenes from Fury Road,
you know,
play through
what would be super cool is if they went through,
because it's still another 2 hours.
If they went through, I wonder if somebody should pitch this to George Miller, you know, just as a side thing and say, would you take the cut scenes from the game, render them at the highest resolution possible, take them into the uncanny valley, and just give this to computer guys and edit this into a movie?
It's great.
Wouldn't that be the coolest
Some of it already
shit?
Looks so good.
It does. But do you know what I mean? That if they took it and made it just that much more realistic with today's technology, which is a light years ahead of last year's technology, which is light years ahead of the years before, and made this into a movie, how cool that would be?
I loved it. I
mean, you'd sit down in the theater, you'd enjoy the shit out of it.
I basically did that. I made popcorn and watched the movie last night, only it was a video game interstitial.
Well, I kept. Here's the thing. I kept thinking I was going to watch about 15 minutes of it.
I kept trying to stop,
and then we would. It's another reason I didn't call you right away. I kept thinking I was going to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the story is great. I mean, it's written. I start out in the story going to kill this dog.
Yeah.
And Max does something incredibly human. He's not going to let me kill the dog.
Right. And he saves the dog, which is the save the dog moment.
But you think about this for a second, and what an odd place to really kind of
there
begin.
There are so many odd choices.
To begin this whole journey with this dog he's not going to let me kill.
That's your character start. Yeah. And then one of the plot starts.
You're leaking.
So Max gets his car stolen, goes to get his car back, and basically is this one-man band attacking this caravan of cars. Yeah. Can't dislodge his car from the back of the thing, climbs up, beats a bunch of dudes up, and then Scrotus comes over, and he's this gigantic Horus of a man, basically, carrying the staff, and on the end of the staff is this chainsaw, which is an awesome idea.
Right.
And they get in this fight, and...
Because you can't cut down trees if you don't have the reach.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Is what I'm saying. It's some guys use the thing where you pull the lever to cut the branches, but put a chainsaw on the end. Because, you know, after the apocalypse,
a lot of trees are a lot
tougher, and they're a lot taller now. Yeah.
He's simply a practical man.
Yeah.
Oh, they also have your what's the Tina Turner line? You're a scruff.
Oh, you're a raggedy man.
Raggedy man.
That was another too. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
So
yeah.
They fight.
Lifted that. And put that right in there.
It's fantastic. It's like Easter eggs for Mad Max fans.
Yeah.
So Max takes the thing and basically in the opening of the game puts a chainsaw through the middle of Scrotus's head.
Yeah.
The guy you're told is the main villain of the game. I was like, wait, what the fuck is happening? This is like a crazy plot twist.
Just kill them.
We're
starting with the last scene.
Yeah, we're starting with the slaughter in a crazy way. He puts a chainsaw in his head, you guys. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. It's such a cool thing. And when Scrotus comes back, allegedly from the dead, in an echo of a Morton Joe, it's a Morton Joe son. He's also immortal. It's this nice little thing happening there. But he's got like a head plug with like a sigil coming out of it, on top of it. Yeah. And to finally kill him, Max has to pull the blade out.
They had to sort of leave the blade. It's like, you know, sometimes when you get stabbed, you don't want to pull the blade out because that's when you got to leave it in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so really
so he made it part of his head.
It's so part and parcel of the world. Yeah. They fix everything in clever ways. They make something out of it. It's a mistake. You've got a blade in your head. Sure. We'll make it beautiful. It'll be a beautiful blade in your head. It's going to be nice. Scrotus.
Are you kidding me? No, we're going to put jewelry on that. It's going to be great. You'll be a hit at parties.
But for those people who are listening right now who are gamers and who do want to talk about briefly the gameplay, because the 2 hours is only a part of the experience.
Yeah.
I would like to call on our second special guest of the day.
Ooh, do we have a gamer?
Ian, are you there?
Yeah, you dirty skags, how you going?
Yeah. Fantastic, ladies and gentlemen.
You dirty skags,
fan
how you
favorite,
going?
And by fan I mean Travis and I are his biggest fans. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Ian Tavener back to the show.
Thanks, guys. 6 months later, and you've interviewed so many people.
right?
Well, it's all been lead up to your second interview. We've been prepping and practicing on people like Mark Sexton and
Brendan McCarthy.
But now we have the real juice. We got the Ian Chatter.
You're the piece de resistance.
That's it.
I'm very resistible.
Ian, you may know this already, but I learned something on this podcast about my co-host that I'd like him to share with you. You may already know this, but I want Yuri to tell you.
Ian, are you aware that I worked on the game?
Yes, I know. You're Stinko.
See, he knew. Travis did not know, so it was a big surprise when we started talking about
you
the game.
You should have seen his face.
Ian, if you ever one-up me again on my own podcast, I swear to God, you're done. We're done.
What are you going to do? Voice at me?
Yeah, I might. Right. Or in 5 years when I'm in Australia.
You close the laptop lid.
So we have another guest for you here.
Yeah, we have another guest that the rest of the listeners...
Well, let's see if he can guess.
Okay, yeah, well, here, we'll introduce you to this guest.
Sure.
All right, I'm just curious if you can guess, just right off the bat, who...
Wait, by this voice?
Who I am.
Okay. Yeah, that's
cool. Okay. Oh, you're the voice of Chum Bucket?
Ian,
holy moly. You're an asshole. Ian, seriously?
Ian, how'd that happen? I'm
how
curious.
Did that even... It doesn't sound anything like...
That sounds like Stank Gun, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's once I get up in that register.
Yeah. So how
the tones. I recognize the tones of the voice.
That is amazing. Because that didn't sound anything
Ian,
like
Joe. Good.
I am purposefully pitching down my voice and doing the antithesis of Chum Bucket.
So you've got the squeaky bits at the top of your range that I can recognize.
Oh, you're actually really amazing. That's really amazing talent.
I feel like you've played this game too much. My segue.
Hold on.
Ian, I feel like you've played the game too much. Too much. Saint, you need to take a fucking break.
Give me a shotgun. I'll be right back.
Oh, crazy.
Was that closer?
I'll tell you, that's why we wanted to have you back on, Ian.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because we wanted to talk about the game, and we have been talking about it for this last little bit with Jason and Travis, about like story elements and so on. But none of us have actually played the game. We watched all the cinematics. We watched them straight through. It's amazing. All of the... I think both Travis and I in particular were surprised at how closely it sticks to the Fury Road universe and how it is a companion piece in so many ways. But we don't know much about the gameplay. And we were wondering if you would be willing to talk about, as a gamer, as somebody who has played through it...
Obviously far too many times. To recognize my voice.
I'm on my first and a half playthrough.
I know that the game came out to mixed reviews as far as gameplay is concerned.
Yeah.
Why do you think the mixed reviews? What was your experience in playing the game?
Well, okay, so you basically get a game basically releasing right on the top of Fury Road, pretty much at the time. Mm-hmm. So everybody's going, oh, there hasn't been a game since pretty much the late '80s when it was on. There was a Road Warrior game for the Nintendo system. That's how long it's been between Mad Max games.
I don't even remember that. Me neither.
Yeah, you wouldn't even remember.
Yeah, clearly it was not a
crazy
game.
Yeah.
And there was going to be a game in 2001 that George Miller was working on that was going to be made by an Australian company, but that fell through for various reasons. Promised to be really, really interesting and really dark. So, you know, we finally hear about, great, Avalanche is doing this game, you know, there's been all this development going on and stuff, so it's like, oh, this is exciting, we finally get to be Mad Max and we get to do the thing. So you get to the game and it looks stunning. It's amazing. It's beautiful, it's desert, it's very much what you sort of think. See, this is where I'm going to drop you in a bit, Jason, but apologies. Yeah. I'm going to say that ahead of time. So you get through the opening cinematic and you see Max get beat up and all this sort of stuff, and you get the dog and you meet Chum for the first time. And from an immersion point of view, because it's so Australiana, it's so iconically Australian, you get this moment where you come up to Chum for the first time and he starts talking about the dog. Mm-hmm. Now, in Road Warrior, and the way it's all spoken in Australian, the pronunciation of the dog is Dinky Die.
Oh, okay. So Dinky D to Dinky Die.
Yeah, Dinky D is like Thank you for playing.
I expected you to get minutia driven at some point. I didn't know you'd open with minutiae, and that feels like a bold minutiae-driven swing.
This is very interesting, because from an acting standpoint, I asked them. I asked them, I said, how do you want this pronounced or done? And they were, I said, what do you want me to do here? And they said, you know, make it your own. Do your own thing, whatever chum bucket's going to do. And I'm like, okay, tinky-dee. Like, it was like the weirdest moment
for me. It does make sense for the character. That sounds better to my ear.
Because he's it's weird because he says it in a way that is just very chum. But I can see exactly what he's saying. I mean, it's not the way that it's said.
But the game, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of this episode.
And that flushes all the gamers down the toilet, at least the ones from Australia.
They're like, out.
I mean, clearly you had established that this game had chosen to not do an Australian dialect for anyone. Well, and then when they came down on the Max character, they changed the Max character.
That was the
But I mean, there are like two maybe other characters who speak with an Australian dialect.
Yeah, did you know about that? Did they record it with an American accent first?
Yeah, they did a private screening for a bunch of Australian gaming journalists, I think the year before it released, and it had an American voice actor, and the Australian journalists just lost it. They just went, he's not Australian.
I just shared that story.
And he's like, they lost it.
Yeah, so. I shared that story with all of them, that I was on the game. I did the game with Brian for a year and a half, did all the cinematics, did all the scenes. And we all talked about it. We were like, you don't want it to be Australian? They're all, no, we don't want it to be Australian. Like, they were very sort of nonchalant with that approach. And we're all like, okay, that's fine. My voice is actually very weird and strange. It doesn't quite have an American... I mean, it does have an American accent, but it's not... How do I say this? Chum Bucket's voice is just different. There are people in the game that are kind of just using their own voice. Mm-hmm. And you know that it has to be Australian. I mean, if you are part of a Mad Max fandom, and when they lost their crap, and they replaced redid all of Brian's lines with Bryn, I had to come in and we did this whole thing. And I asked them point blank then too. I said, "Are we gonna redo Chum Bucket?" And they looked at me and they said, "No, we love Chum just the way he is. He's just this character who's a wingnut, and he's in this world, and how we came by him, or how he is who he is." The writer, who was brilliant, Odd, the guy who wrote this story, all the dialogue and all the stuff he says, brilliant writer, he said, "Nope, we're leaving Chum Bucket the way
he is."
So
weird.
I know.
It's an interesting choice. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, when you look at the development of the game, they said when they went and scouted locations for when they were trying to find aesthetics and trying to make the world look the way it did, they went to Costa Rica.
Why?
For visuals.
For what?
Because they wanted that exotic feel.
No, you know what they wanted? They wanted a vacation to Costa Rica. Yeah. I know how that works.
I was just going to say, I think that was a production line idea.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Probably. So, but that's the weird thing to me, because when you grow up with something like I have, and a lot of Mad Max fans in Australia have, you look for things that remind you of that movie a lot. And you get to certain points of the game, like near Gastown particularly. I remember getting to a point and there's like this highway and there are these telegraph poles and all sort of stuff. And for a moment I went, oh, this looks fantastic. And as soon as I crested a hill in the game, I saw mesas in the distance, like the American desert. And I went, that's nothing like we have out here at all.
Interesting.
Wow. I've never heard an Australian give their opinion. I've read some here and there. But again, like I said, I don't keep up on the reviews of stuff like that. Once I do a piece, I'm not really much in control after that. It's so interesting to hear your opinion because, and here's the biggest reason, there wasn't an Australian in the room.
Ever.
Making those decisions. Yeah. Ever on set or anywhere else. And I honestly think if you're going to take a piece of a culture, an iconic one, an iconic story, and tell it, you should have somebody to reference. I mean, Skype is only a phone call away. We had a guy from France. We had a guy from Sweden. We had a guy... I mean, we had people from all over the planet. Not from Australia. Very interesting.
Well, you guys have you talked to Mark Sexton about this at all?
No, we haven't. We may have to go back and do it. But if you have a Mark Sexton story about this, tell it.
Well, yeah, well, when I met him a couple of years ago, he hadn't played the game either. In fact, no one from Kennedy and Millett Mitchell had even seen the game. So I was talking to him about it, and he said, oh, yeah, I did up a bunch of the concept art. I did Gastown. I said some of the War Boys. I concepted Scrotus as well.
That makes a lot of sense all of a sudden.
Thank you, because I wasn't sure if he was involved. The production design is so similar.
To a point. So he said apparently they got to a point when during the production of the film, because it was being done with Warner Brothers production game, video game production house, they got to a certain point with the movie where Warner Brothers got really jittery about the whole production of the movie. And he basically said, at that point, Kennedy Miller Mitchell's involvement with the game was pulled away from them.
That makes a lot of sense.
Interesting.
And so apparently Avalanche, they farmed it out to Avalanche LA, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And basically it just sort of developed independently from that point on.
That's actually better to me. I appreciate that more.
There are seeds all planted for this world.
And then it diverges.
Which is awesome, because you get to see how different people would sort of manifest those designs. The designs, I think, Ian, I said with the movies, it has the designs at a 10, the game's like a 13 or 14. Like, everything feels a little more hyper-real, a little more amped up, which I like, personally. I think that's really cool.
The downside to that, though, is because they have those designs, you basically get War Boys, and then you get a plethora of War Boy clones in different colors.
Yeah.
So they just repeat the same thing over and over again because they're not sure about how to develop something uniquely interesting. Mm-hmm. And that reflects in the gameplay as well, because the whole point of the gameplay is you have these territories controlled by Scrotus, and you basically weaken his influence in order to get where you need to go in the story. Mm-hmm. And basically it involves attacking these camps with like boss characters in certain ones of them. And you do that ad infinitum. You basically rinse and repeat and rinse and repeat and rinse and repeat. And that's pretty much the whole game. It falls into this very repetitive pattern of doing the same thing over again.
How long did it take you to play the game through the first time?
60 hours, all told.
60?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive. But it also, as I understand it, the game has different things you can do with it. One is, playing through that narrative story. And then there's also just a free roaming element, right?
That's a misnomer. That's a complete misnomer.
Okay.
So how much have you read about the story or how it ends and such?
We just watched cinematics, Yuri and I did.
Yeah, we watched the 2 hours of cinematics back to back. Somebody sort of threaded them all together and watched it like a movie.
Wearing a salad strainer on his back. Right. That's where his experience.
Yeah, and I of course know how it ends.
Right.
Yeah. So you get to this point. Chum dies with the magnum opus.
Oh, crap.
And really oddly, as someone who's playing the game, you've got this enormously powerful card that's better than the Interceptor in a lot of ways. And right at the end of the game, you lose that card, but you get the Interceptor back.
Yeah.
But you think it's been destroyed at the very beginning. It's like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
So you get the ending cinematic, he drives off, and it goes, congratulations, you now have unlocked the classic Road Warrior max outfit, and you've got the classic Interceptor. You are now in free roam mode. And it's like, well, I've just about done 95% of everything there is to do on the map at this stage.
Well, Ian, so I will say that since Scrotus is in that car, it's literally Deus Ex Machina. He's in the machine.
Wow, yeah, he is.
Thank you. So basically, they're allowed to do whatever they want at that point, story-wise, as far as I'm concerned.
It's so empty at that point. It's really disappointing because I would recommend if you get any chances to do so, have a look at the actual game map they've provided for the game. Mm-hmm. And there's this thing called the Big Nothing. So if you drive out into it in the game mechanic is it starts damaging you until the point that you die. So it's basically saying you can't go there.
Okay.
And it compromises nearly a third of the total game space for the game map.
It sounds like they ran out of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and possibly resources. I found what they call a trainer for the game, so I could basically hack the game and give myself unlimited health and stuff. And you can traverse that space after a while.
Ian, why are you a cheater? What are you cheating for?
Because that's what you do in the wasteland.
Oh, you Aussies are
so tough. The wasteland.
You Aussies are so tough. Overall, did you enjoy, I guess you're playing through it again. Would you say that, your enjoyment or the reason for doing the game again is that it's a fun game?
He's
or that
hoping
you're
that
Max?
I'll pronounce Dinky Dine right.
he never does, Ian.
Yeah, you can play it as many times as you want. And Chumbucket never goes, oh, are you leaking there, Dinky Dine?
Yeah, we'll record that as a ringtone, though.
Yeah, I'll record it to you, Ian, so that you can play it, and it will make it all better.
By the way, how much of the game of the enjoyment for the second time around is Mad Max enjoyment versus gameplay enjoyment?
I think it's Mad Max enjoyment. The first time I played through, I didn't have a particularly powerful graphics card to look at all the shininess of the game. So, like, they have all these amazing effects. They have dust effects and sunlight rays and. If you drive through debris, it kicks up the debris, and there's dust you can actually watch wafting in front of your face. I didn't have that at the time. I have that now. So now I'm looking at it in the fullest experience of the way it was intended to be viewed.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to say I really appreciate you sharing your candid opinion about this game. Because all too often when I hear somebody's like, oh, you're Chumbucket, oh, it was great. I really treasure Mad Max. Even growing up in America, I loved The Road Warrior. I loved that movie. I enjoyed Mad Max, the first one. I enjoyed even Thunderdome. Like, I...
You shut really, your filthy mouth.
Shut up. I feel that it's important to me to have, you know, done a good job. And when I hear that there are things that they didn't get right, even though as an actor I was begging them for direction and asking, hey, you know, is this the way we should be going? Do you want me to do this with an Australian accent? What is this the way you say that? And they paid a lot of attention to a lot of things very specifically, but it's interesting to see where they didn't. And it's sad because they did spend a lot of time making certain choices for things, and the stuff I remember them agonizing over from a writing perspective and stuff like that, you know, I want you to know, I think the care was there. I just think a lot of times they just misplaced it because they didn't have a true Australian, like, advisor. I really think that's...
I think that's the voice that's missing, because you see that there's this... but there are moments where the one place that really struck me as being really Australian is when Max goes to rescue Glory the Child.
Yes.
And he goes into that underground... It's basically a...
Airport.
It's an airport mall. And it's like, we have a major airport in Sydney. It's an international airport. And it's very reminiscent of that. So when you get out there in the game and you're driving around, it's all just sort of like, you know, mostly covered over. And then you see wreckage of planes sitting in the desert and stuff. And it's like, yeah. Oh, that's evocative. That's really strong and a powerful sort of visual moment.
Right. Yeah. Now, I know that, you know, the joy of playing a Mad Max game is a lot of the driving. We don't get a lot of the driving when we watch the cinematics. What percentage was it, you know, like driving combat versus him running around and, you know, picking up spare parts?
Oh, so much. It's like a good 75% of the game.
Okay.
One of the strongest mechanics in the game is building the car.
Yeah.
And you build it from the ground up. You go, you bust into this place, you steal the chassis for the car. Then you get to select the body of the car that's going to sit on the chassis.
Her beautiful body.
Shut up back there. But, yeah, you get to design everything from bull bars to spikes to decorative items to the suspension to how much nitrous there is to if you want spikes on the wheels. It's ridiculous. It's more customization than Max gets as a character, which is very strange. And then, yeah, a lot of it is you're driving from point A to point B to do things.
Right.
The most exciting and probably the most iconic part of the game they got right was ironically nothing to do with the main part of the gameplay. It was incidental.
What is it?
So there are these roving patrols that they have in the areas. So like they say, here's this guy, he's the leader of this particular war party or patrol or whatever you want to call it. And if you destroy him, it not only weakens Scrotus's control, but you get a special trophy for a result. So, yeah, it's sort of incentive-based to go and attack them. But he's protected by a bunch of vehicles. So it basically becomes this road chase where you're chasing the bad guys and you're having to fend off all of the minions at the same time. So it's high octane. You've got to keep pursuing. You've got to keep damaging. So it's literally Mad Max at that moment.
That's cool.
And you're pursuing them around the map, down through little canyons and twists and turns, trying to... And because it's a sort of a very interactive combat they worked out, like the War Boys can literally jump from their cars onto your cars to attack you.
Yeah.
So you can shoot them with a shotgun and blow them off.
That sounds pretty
cool. Or smash them into another vehicle and kill them that way.
How many people do you think you virtually or digitally killed in your life, Ian?
Are we talking the entire span of all my gaming life?
Yeah, your entire life. Rough estimate.
Oh, I'd be on Death Star levels for that one.
All of Alderaan.
See, this is exactly why I wanted to have you come and visit this episode, Ian, because I needed somebody to provide me with the incentive to really want to play the game at this point.
And
you talking like that is, Travis and I are nodding each other going, okay, we weren't going to play the game, but I think now we have to play the game.
Yeah, we're going to play it now for sure.
Yeah, the joy for if you will be designing the car.
That's cool. Yeah. I can't wait. I have one more question, Ian.
I'll never play it. I mispronounced that crap.
You're out.
Jason
never able to get past that. Jason's self-flagellating since you said that. He has a hair shirt on now. And he's beating himself in the face. It's weird.
It's actually a hunchback, a hair hunchback.
A hair hunchback. Ian,
the best way to quote that then, if we're telling him to leave, it's, you have to quote Humongous at that point.
What?
Just walk away.
Oh.
Yep.
Just walk away.
Yep.
Just walk away.
You may not know the answer to this question, Ian, but it's just something that's been bugging me. And you know Mark, so maybe, this is probably it's definitely a Mark Sexton question. In the comic book, all the likenesses of all the characters are spot on. You can tell Riley Keough, and you can tell all the actors. You can tell Tom Hardy for a lot of it. In the flashback scenes to the first and second Mad Max films, it's not Mel Gibson. It's just a standard dude. Do you know if they couldn't get Mel Gibson's likeness rights?
It actually seems to be more like the voice actor. They seem to have drawn upon his likeness.
In the comic book?
No. That's a generic sort of guy.
I'm saying specifically in the comic book. Because in the comic book, everyone looks exactly like their actor in the movie. And in previous things. The only person who doesn't look anything like the person is the Mel Gibson Mad Max.
That's a strange one.
I think
that's probably more of a Mark question, but okay. I suspect it's because they didn't want to get trapped into having a specific Max be Mel or Tom.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think they wanted that sort of mythical sort of Max that just sort of exists in that story.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
And it applies to the game as well.
Sorry for the divergence.
He looks like Max in the armor, but he doesn't look like Max in the face at all.
Yeah.
So, which is smart, I think.
Well, thanks for guesting on the, for popping in to talk about gameplay. We really appreciate you being available half the world away.
The most special podcast ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yes. Ever done.
This is right.
I'm sitting here wearing my I Live, I Die, I Live Again t-shirt.
There you go.
You know, yesterday I was wearing, my mother-in-law for Christmas sent me a shirt that says, my life is fire, my world is fire and blood.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Like, you're a new dad here. Right. The hell.
That's what you achieve.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing.
It's funny.
I like the fact that she gets you.
Yeah.
Well, I got the feeling that she either gets me or she called my wife and said, I have no idea what to, and she's like, well, he likes Mad Max. And then she's a research hound. Yeah. She's a research hound. So she went on and she found,
oh, this is, you know, nice. It's my life is fire and blood.
Exactly.
Let's get this for Yuri.
Exactly.
My mom got me a scrotum of codpiece, Ian, that I've been wearing incessantly. Yeah. So
giant
my mom
rhino
gets
horn.
Me.
The only problem is he's wearing it on his head right now.
Is that not where it goes?
No, it's just...
I thought your cod meant head in Australian.
He's knocked over the beers twice.
This is
I don't know.
Yeah, you're not wearing Humongous's codpiece on your head.
I am. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well,
like
Ian, you won't have to...
That's not good.
Ian, you won't have to wait too long to hear this because I have to get this out in time for tomorrow, so I'll be cutting this later tonight or tomorrow.
Fabulous.
Thank you for joining us again. It is always a delight to hear your voice.
Thank you. Thanks. It's really good to hear you and meet you, Jason. That's fantastic.
Yeah, of course. And thank you so much for coming on, taking your time. Appreciate it.
Oh, same.
Thanks, Ian.
All right. Thanks, Ian. Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
That's Ian Tavener.
Ian Tavener, ladies and gentlemen.
I feel so bad.
I feel so guilty. Don't feel bad.
No, but because that is an authentic... actual reason not to enjoy this game. right? And when you think about it, they made it for a particular group of fans who love Mad Max.
But
and
it had nothing to do with you. You should not feel bad for this.
Yeah, why do you hate Australians is my follow-up question.
Like, why does Spizak hate everybody in the Southern Hemisphere?
What a jerk.
He's really got no respect for an entire
culture. His antipathy flows the opposite way on the Southern Hemisphere.
It does. Apparently. It circles the drain backwards.
Yes, it does.
My antipathy for the Australian pronunciation of Dinky Dinky D. Boo. And they shut the game off.
It's so funny.
It's like literally 5 minutes.
Scene of
it's less than 5 minutes in. I were at 120 seconds and mispronunciation.
And boo. Out. Yeah. It is funny though to think about.
This was about to be a good game, but it sucks.
Yeah. It's funny to think about what people cue into and need.
Right?
Because I'm the same
way. He's honest about it.
This is me too. You're the same way, but if you get a screenplay and the first two pages is a typo, I'm out.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
Not because I don't think people should make mistakes, but because that implies to me the rest of the script is not going to be meticulously thought through.
Yeah.
I don't have typos in my scripts because I read them 1,000 fucking times before I let someone else read them.
Right.
So I get what he's saying. Anyway.
And for that to happen so early on and for me to have enjoyed creating this character and creating this story and for it to take someone out of it so quickly is a real, how do I say this? It's an eye opener. It does remind you that you're trying hard to tell a good story, and I'm always on the director and I'm on the writers and I'm making sure, you know how we are, we're trying to tell a good story. And that even despite your efforts, you can miss it for half the world, but it also shows that
there are so many different people involved in the making of something like this, whether it's a movie or a game, and you have so little control as an actor of, you know, over a lot of that stuff.
So, which is why I've taken the hair shirt off now.
Good. Salad strainer's still on though, guys.
Burn the hair shirt.
Still wearing the salad strainer.
It's going to smell delicious.
It did smell a little weird.
So, do we want to, like, are there any more things? I mean, I think this, if anything, this podcast can hopefully convinced to you to at least go on YouTube and watch the cinematics all in a row.
Not if you're from Australia.
But not if you're from Australia.
How many hours tonight will you be up thinking about this?
Oh my gosh. I literally was blown away. I have never thought about it from an Australian person's point of view.
Walk away.
And I thought...
Walk away.
What an interesting point of view.
Sit in it.
I mean...
Dwell on your mistakes,
and
please.
To hear how utterly honest he was and disappointed. And he's like, oh... This is the actor who played Chum Bucket.
Couple notes.
Okay, literally, right out of the gate. It wasn't like, man, did you do the physicality on that? Or, man, you know, wow, what a tortured, it took place in this universe type story of somebody who could help you the whole time and then betray you and then die, and very engaging. But there was this one part that I didn't like. No, it was straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
Nothing you did matters, but... mispronounced the fucking dog, bro.
It all boils down to he's played this game through more than once.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that.
He said it 1.5, which means he's seen the dog mispronunciation twice and probably fast-forwarded to the second one.
To be fair, you said that dog's name more than once. So it's probably 6 or 7 times.
Plenty of times.
Yeah, so it's a lot.
And it was, they kept saying, oh, we love the way you say that. Everybody involved, like, everybody was like, oh, say it again. Ding. Say it again in that cute
Chum Bucket way.
Well, that was the point.
Yeah.
But yet to have it so misinterpreted and misaligned with the goal of telling the story and took the gentleman out of it and took the whole culture out of it. Very sad.
But also, when you're dealing with something that has such a long-standing existence...
You can't put this podcast out
there now. This is the best podcast we've ever done.
I'm totally kidding.
This is the number one episode.
But if you've got, I have learned to let it go, and I'm doing this because it's good theater. Because, you know... Yeah,
it's great.
To know,
sitting in it is better theater.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. I'm so done.
You've moved on.
I'm so done.
Ian just tweeted about us just now.
Right.
I'm
sure.
Let me say.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I got a chance
to
tell
Chum Bucket.
I finally got to tell those USA. Yeah. Dinky die.
Dinky die.
As in, what is it, Chum Bucket? Fucking die.
I feel like I've gotten a good sense of how games work, which is one of my goals coming on. I knew nothing. I've intentionally avoided asking you that question about how these things are recorded.
Wow.
But I really liked hearing about how this
the
process
creation
is.
Of a game, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is just from one perspective. Yeah. There's so much that goes into a game.
Oh yeah, by the time we get there, they've already been building worlds and engines and stuff.
I came here expecting to meet one badass, but unbeknownst to me, I met two badasses today.
That's right.
This is really good. I met two badasses and Chubb Bucket.
That should be the name of this episode. Two badasses and a rhino horn.
Yeah, I'm in. I brought the rhino horn, so.
I why not?
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And I'm Jason Spezak. Thanks for having me.
And you are awaited.